Aleph, we're up to the 11th line. So the Gemara, if you're just to kind of calibrate, we were talking about yesterday, we were discussing this idea that Koresh basically was Hechmetz, that Koresh corrupted his ways, and that's why initially we calculated his months from Nisan, and then eventually we changed it to Tishrei. So this is another source that Koresh corrupted his ways. How do we know that Koresh corrupted his ways? Dichsiv, Nidbachin di Evan Glalt Chlasa, Vinidbach di Achadas, Vinifkisa min Beis Malka Tisyev. So this is a pasuk from Sefer Ezra, where the Psukim describe how Koresh essentially basically took timber and wood and different types of things like that, you know, different raw materials, and basically said, I'm going to pay for it. All the materials that they needed to construct the Beis HaMikdash, Koresh said, I'm going to pay for it. So the Gemara asks, why did Koresh insist that there needed to be wood fixed in or built into the Mikdash? So the Gemara says, Savar imardubi Yehudai ikliye benura. So Koresh had actually some ulterior motives here when he said that I'm going to use wood as the foundation of the Mikdash. He basically figured that if the Jews rebel, it'll be much easier to burn down the Mikdash if the foundation is made of wood. So the Gemara says, well, hang on one second. Atu Shlomo lo avarachi v'achsev shlosha ture gazis v'tur karsos arazim. The Gemara says, well, how could you blame Koresh for using wood in the Mikdash? Shlomo HaMelech used wood when building Bayis Rishon. A pasuk explicitly in Sefer Malachim talks about how there was wood, how there was cedar wood used in the foundation of Bayis Rishon. So it wasn't Koresh's fault necessarily. So the Gemara says, no, there were certain distinctions between the way Shlomo and Koresh built it. So for example, Shlomo avad milamala v'ihu avad milamata. Shlomo shake bivinyana, ihu lo shake bivinyana. Shlomo sadi besida, ihu lo sadi besida. There are three basic distinctions between the way Shlomo and Koresh constructed the wood. So Shlomo put the wood on top of the layers of all the other material, whereas Koresh put it on the bottom. So for Koresh, it would be much easier to burn if the foundation was made of wood. The second distinction is the fact that Shlomo basically sunk the wood into the construction, whereas Koresh did not. And the third distinction was that Shlomo plastered over the wood, so he put other materials over it, so it wouldn't be quite as easy to burn. So again, Lemaisa, it turns out that Koresh did have ulterior motives when constructing the Mikdash in wood the way that he did. Fine. Then the Gemara says, Rav Yosef Yisem Rav Yitzchak Amar, Minolan da Achmitz, Mehacha, Vayomer li Hamelech Vahashegal Yoshev Esetzlo. This is a pasuk that we referenced a little bit yesterday from Nehemiah, where the pasuk describes that the king, that Artachshasta, in this case, who we said was Koresh, was all the same person, was sitting next to a Shegal. So, my Shegal, what's a Shegal? So, Amar Rabba Bar Lima Mishmei Derav, Kalbisa. Now, the word Shegal literally translates into a consort, right? Some kind of a woman that you use her services for prostitution. In this case, the Gemara says that a shegal is actually a reference to a female dog that was apparently used for bestiality. So the Gemara says, well, hang on a second. Elamayata, hadichziv, v'almara shemaya hisromamta, ulemanaya divayse haisiv kadamach, va'ant v'rav rivanayach shegla sechu lechena sech chamra shasin behon, v'i shegal kalbasihi, kalbasa bas mishti achamrahi. The problem with interpreting the word shegal as referring to a female dog is that we have a pasuk in Sefer Daniel that doesn't seem to bear this out. The pasuk in Daniel is describing a conversation that Nebuchadnezzar is having with Daniel, and he's talking about the fact that he's going to, you know, elevate himself over Hashem, that he's going to use the kalim of the Beis HaMikdash, and he says, you and all of your officers, and then it says, Shegela Seichu Lechena Seich, your consorts and your concubines, they're all going to drink wine. Now, if you're going to tell me that the word Shegal, that is not literally a consort, it's a female dog, well, you know, the assumption is that dogs are not drinking wine. So the Gemara says, no. The Gemara says, Halo Kasha, Demalfa Levishasya, maybe you train the dog to drink wine. So that's not such an overwhelming question. Fine. Then the Gemara says, Elameata, Tichsev, Benos Melachim, Biikarosacha, Nitzeva, Shegali, Mincha, Bechasem Ophir, Vi Shegal Kalbasahi, Maikam, Vasar, Luhu, Navi, Israel. We have a pasuk from Tehillim. The pasuk in Tehillim says that their princesses who have all of their royalty and all of their jewelry, they're going to be standing to the right of the Shegal with the gold of Ophir. Now, again, the problem is if the Shegal is a female dog, what kind of a nevuah is this? What kind of a prophecy is David HaMelech, you know, highlighting here, if that's what the word means? The Gemara gives a very strange interpretation. Hachi kamar, b'schar shechaviva Torah liYisrael kishegal la'ovdei kochavim, zachisem l'chesem ofir, that since we value Torah the way that non-Jews value a consort, value this, basically for lack of a better term, call her a prostitute, therefore we merited all this wealth, all this gold from the city of Ophir. That's one interpretation. V'iba yaseima liola Shegal Malka. So hey, the other shot is no. Maybe the consort is literally it was a queen. It was actually a woman who was hired for her services. The Rabba Bar Lima Gemara Gamirla. Rabba Bar Lima had some kind of a tradition to that effect. The Amai Kari La Shegal. So why do we refer to her as a consort if she was really the queen? So the Gemara says Shahi Sachaviva Alav Keshegal. This is a slightly more I don't know if you want to call it like a romantic shot. It's still a little bit strange, but basically he valued his wife, the queen, the way that he would a consort. And then finally Inami Shahu Shiva Bimkom Shegal. And the final interpretation that the Gemara offers is that maybe she was in place of the Shegal, maybe she was in place of the consort. Fine. Then the Gemara gives another interpretation about how we know that Koresh corrupted his ways. Iba Yasema Minalan da Achmitz Mehacha. Ad Ksaf Kikarin Ma'av, Ad Chintin Korin Ma'av, Ad Chamar Batin Ma'av, Ad Batin Meshach Ma'av, Umelach Dilach Sav, Me'ikara Belo Kitsusa, Vahashta Bekitsusa. So the Psukim here in Sefer Ezra describe that when Koresh was basically telling, telling his people to hand all these things out to the Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash, you know, they needed a certain amount of silver, and they needed a certain amount of gold, and they needed a certain amount of wine, and oil, and salt, and all these different things. So in this Pasuk in Sefer Ezra, he's putting certain limitations on the amount that they're going to get. Now they're only getting 100 talents of silver, and they're only getting 100 core of salt, and they're only getting 100 batin of oil, and all these different kinds of things. And yet, when you look back earlier in the Pasuk that we quoted, the Pasuk we quoted actually at the top of this daf, which we actually saw yesterday, that Pasuk in Ezra said that Koresh gave the Kohanim endless amounts of supplies of whatever they needed, right? We saw the Pasuk yesterday, Dilo Shalu, that that they weren't shortchanged on anything. So it sounds like he's almost backtracking. It sounds like beforehand, Koresh was extremely generous. Now he was a little bit less generous. Maybe this is the source that he corrupted his ways. So the Gemara says, no, that's not necessarily a good proof. The Dilma me'ikara lo hava kimle bekitsusa. So the Gemara says, that's not necessarily a proof. It could be that the original Pasuk we quoted from Sefer Ezra, which said that Koresh just handed things out, basically without any sort of cap on it, that could just be because he didn't know how much things the Jewish people needed in the Mikdash. But eventually, maybe he figured it out. Maybe he said, okay, we only need X amount of salt, X amount of oil, X amount of wine. So this later Pasuk in Ezra is just basically the recalibration of numbers based on what they actually needed. So the Gemara says, right, Ela Mechvarta Kedeshani Meikar. So this particular source ends up not being a valid source that Koresh corrupted his ways, but rather all the other sources that we've been quoting today and yesterday seem to point in the direction that Koresh eventually did corrupt his ways. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah of Valir Regalim, we said that Nisan was also the Rosh Hashanah for the Regalim. So the Gemara asks, Regalim be'echad b'Nisanu, b'chamishasar b'Nisanu. What does that mean? That Nisan is the Rosh Hashanah of the Regalim. We know that Pesach, the Regel, is on the 15th of Nisan. Why are we saying Aleph Nisan is the Rosh Hashanah of the Regalim? So the Gemara says, no. Amar Chista, Regel Shebo Rosh Hashanah l'Regalim, Nafkamina l'Noder l'Meikam Alei Bevalta Acher. So this idea that Nisan is the Rosh Hashanah l'Regalim basically means that it has ramifications in the realm of Baal Ta'achir. Baal Ta'achir means that if a person pledges, a person makes a neder to bring a carbon, you're not allowed to delay bringing that carbon beyond a certain time. As we're going to see going on through the rest of this daf, there's going to be a big machlokas in the Gemara, exactly how long of a time frame do you have to bring that carbon. So the Gemara says, this particular shita in our Mishnah is reflecting Rabbi Shimon, right? The Gemara says, Rabbi Shimoni. Tisanya, Echad Hanoder, V'echad Hamaktish, V'echad Hamarich, Kevin She'avru Alav Gimel Regalim over Baal Ta'achir, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Gimel Regalim Kisidron V'chaga Matzos Tchila. So there's a big machlokas in the Gemara. If a person either makes a neder to bring a carbon, or he pledges to give something to Hektish, or he pledges to give, his erichin, his value or someone else's value to the Mikdash, whatever the case may be. So the question is, how long do you have to give those carbonos, or that money or whatever it is, before you violate the Yisra of Baal Ta'achir? So according to the Tanakhama, you have three regalim from the day that you made the pledge. So whatever, in other words, once three regalim pass from the day you made the pledge, according to the Tanakhama, you violated the Isser, whereas Rav Shimon has a much more lenient position. He says, no. He says you have to go through three regalim in order, starting from Pesach, starting from Chag HaMatzah. So Aleph Nisa now all of a sudden becomes very significant, specifically according to Rav Shimon, because, in other words, for example, let's say you took a pledge on Aleph Iyar to bring a carbon. According to Rav Shimon, you're going to basically have almost like a year and a half to bring that, because you have to go through three regalim starting from Pesach. So that means you're going to have actually probably even more than that. You're going to have to start again from Pesach of the following year. Almost 2 years. Exactly. So yeah, so according to Rav Shimon, so it's going to become very significant to know when is the Rosh Hashanah of the Regalim. And in fact, the Gemara explains, V'chein hayu Rishim ben Yochai Omer, Regalim pa'amim gimel, pa'amim dalet, pa'amim chamisha. Ketzad, nader lefnei ha-Pesach gimel, lefnei ha-Tzeres chamisha, lefnei ha-Chagarba, as we just alluded to a second ago, right, we said that it really just depends on when you took the pledge, when you took the nether. That will determine how long or how many Regalim you have, according to Rav Shimon at least, to actually offer that carbon or to, or, to give that money. Fine. Then the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan. Chayve hadamin v'ha'arachin ha'charamin v'ha'hekdeshos chatos v'ha'ashamos olos u'shlamim tzedakos u'maisros b'chor u'maisar u'pesach leket shechecha u'feya kevan she'avru alein shlosha regalim over b'val ta'acher. Rab Shimon omer shlosha regalim kesidran v'chaga matos t'chila. Rabbi Meir omer kevan she'avru alein regal echad over b'val ta'acher. Rab Eliezer ben Yaakov omer kevan she'avru alein shnei regalim over b'val ta'acher. Rabbi Elazar Rab Shimon omer kevan she'avru alein chaga sukos over alein b'val ta'acher. Now we quote a whole bunch of other shitos, which again the Gemara is going to analyze each of these, but just to preface these other shitos, the Gemara says that again this concept of b'val ta'acher doesn't only apply to a karban, it applies to basically any pledge that you have to give to the mikdash. It could be money, it could be a karban, it could be maaser, it could even be things like leket shechecha and peya, which are, you know, different types of agricultural things to give to the aniyim. Again, there's a whole range of things that this isser of b'al ta'acher could potentially be violated for. So again, the first shita which we've already quoted is the shita of the Tana Kama, that once three regalim pass, regardless of the order, you violate the isser. Rav Shimon, we also spoke about earlier in the Gemara where we said that it has to be three regalim starting with Pesach. Then the Gemara quotes several other shitas where Reb Meir says, no, even if one regal passes, that's it, you violate the Isser. Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov says, once two regalim pass, you violate the Isser. And then Rabbi Elazar, Reb Shimon says, once Sukkot passes, you violate the Isser. Now again, they were going to analyze each of these shitas. So my time at the Tanakama. Tanakama, again, was the one who said that it's just three regalim, regardless of the order. What's the basis for his position? So the Gemara says, Michti, Minayu Salik, Lama Lilami Hadaru Michtav, Bechaga Matzosu, Chaga Shavuosu, Chaga Sukos, Shmami Nolav Al Ta'acher. If you look at the Sukkim in Parshas Re'eh that are describing all the halachos of the regalim. So after going through all the details of Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, the pasuk says, which is a famous pasuk that we say a musaf on Yontif or on Shal Shugah, Mechol Moed, Bechaga Matzos, Uvchaga Shavuos, Uvchaga Sukkot. So the Gemara says that pasuk seems to be superfluous. We've just spent many pesukim talking about all the halachos of the Yom Tovim. Why is the pasuk saying again? Oh, in other words, just in case you forgot, it's Chaga Matzos, Chaga Shavuos, Chaga Sukkot. So clearly, says the Tana Kama, that's teaching me that one violates the Isra Baal Ta'acher once three regalim pass. That's the Tana Kama. For Rabbi Shimon Omer, Inot Sarach Lomar Bechag Asukos Shabo Dibar Akasov, Loma Ne'emar, Lomar Shezeach Haron. So then, what about Rabbi Shimon? So again, Rabbi Shimon was the one who said that it has to be Pesach first in order to violate the Isser. So Rabbi Shimon says, because the Psukim immediately before this in Parshas Re'eh were describing the Halachos of Sukkos, so therefore it becomes unnecessary for the Pasuk now to highlight and say Bechag Asukos. So that must teach me, says Rabbi Shimon, that Sukkos is the last of the three regalim that must pass in order to violate Baal Ta'acher, which is another way of saying that Pesach has to be the first one. So again, that's Rav Shimon's position. Now the Gemara says, Rabbi Meir my time. So again, Rabbi Meir was the one who said that even once one regal passes, you violate the Isser. What's the basis for that? It says in the beginning of Parshas Re'eh, Uvasa Shama Vahadesem Shama, right? It says that you're going to come to the Mikdash and you're going to offer the Karbanu. So according to Rabbi Meir, there is no allowance, there's no heter to basically delay more than a single yantav. You have to offer the Karbanus right away. V'Rabbanan, so the question is, how did Rabbanan deflect that source? How would the Rabbanan respond to that? They say, no, Hahuli Aseh, that pasuk of Uvasa Shama V'Havesem Shama is merely an Isser Aseh. In other words, there's a mitzvah Aseh to bring the karbanos that you pledged to bring as early as possible. But the difference is that according to the Rabbanan, you would not violate the Isser before three regalim, whereas according to Rabbi Meir, you would. For Rabbi Meir, Kevan de Amar le'Rachamana, I say, velo I say, Memela kam le'Baval Ta'acher. And again, Rabbi Meir would respond and say, no, once the Torah tells you to bring the Karban and you fail to do so, that's a violation of Baal Ta'acher. So according to Rabbi Meir, you violate the Isser even after only one regal. For Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, my time, so Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov was the one who said you violated the Isser after two regalim. What's the basis for that position? Dichsiv, it says at the end of Parshas Pinchas, Ela ta'asu la'Hashem b'mo'adeichem. These you shall bring to Hashem on your holidays. So the Gemara says, Miyod Moadim Shnayim. The word Moadechem or Moadim is in the plural, that implies at least two. So again, how would the Rabbanan deflect that? For Rabbanan, Hahu Lecha de Rabbi Yonah. The Amar Rabbi Yonah, Hukshu Kol HaMoadim Kulam Zelazeh, Shekulam Mechabrim Al Tumas Mikdash VeKadashav. Whereas the Rabbanan, you derive from that Pasuk a drasha that's quoted by Rabbi Yonah, Mesechah Shavuos, where he says that all of the Chagim are compared to each other in that the Karbanos that are associated with the Chagim are Mechabr for what's called Tumas Mikdash VeKadasha, which basically means a guy enters the Mikdash when he's Tamei, or he eats a carbon when he's Tamei, or the carbon itself is Tamei. All these different, you know, types of scenarios of Tumah are atoned for by the Karbanos of the Chag, and that's derived from that Pasuk. So according to the Rabbanan, that Pasuk has no bearing on the Halacha of Baal Ta'acher. It's teaching me that the Karbanos of Yontif are Mechaper for various cases of Tumah. Okay, fine. Then the final position we quoted was Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon Maitama. He was the one who said that basically once Sukkot passes, you violate the Isser. So what's the basis for that? that. Desanya Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon Omer Lo Ye Amer Chag Asukos Shabo Diber Akasov Lo Man Amar Lo Amar Shes Agorim. Again, similar in a way to a sheet to be quoted earlier of Rabbi Shimon that Chag Asukos is superfluous because remember the Pesukim right before this in Parshas Ra'eh were discussing Sukkos. So the fact that the Pesuk repeats Sukkos is an indication that once Sukkos passes you by, you've now violated the Isra Baal Tachrit. So these are the bases for all of the opinions that we've quoted. Now the Gemara is going to analyze even further. The Rabbi Meir, the Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, Hai b'Chag HaMatzos, Chag HaShavuos, Chag HaSukkos, my Darshu Beis. So now we have another problem. Two of the positions that we've quoted, namely Rabbi Meir, who said only one Chag has to pass you by to violate Baal Tachrit, and Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, who said only two have to pass you by, how do they justify, how do they explain the pasuk b'chag hamatzos u'chag hashavuos u'chag hasukkos, which is otherwise superfluous? That pasuk seems to indicate that three regalim have to pass by. That seems to go against those two positions. So the Gemara says, no, mibay lehu l'cheder Rabbi Elazar, sorry, l'cheder Rabbi Elazar amar Rabbi Oshia, amar Rabbi Elazar amar Rabbi Oshia, minayin liatzeres sheyesh latashlumin kol sheva, Talmud lomar, b'chag hamatzos u'chag hashavuos u'chag hasukkos, makesh chag hashavuos l'chag hamatzos, ma chag hamatzos yesh latashlumin kol sheva, al chag hashavuos. So basically, that teaches me that there's a concept of tashlumin even for Shavuos. We know that for the other regalim, that for Pesach and Sukkos, you have a concept of tashlumin, meaning if for whatever reason you couldn't bring the carbon on the first day of Yontif, you have the rest of Yontif to bring it. How do I know that that principle applies to Shavuos? Shavuos is only one day, so one could have argued logically that if you missed the first day of Shavuos, you missed the only day of Shavuos in Eretz Yisrael to bring the carbon, that maybe you can't bring it at all. So no, we have a chiddush that you have 7 days that in which you can bring the carbon afterwards. That's called tashlumin. So then the question is, v'leikash lechaga Sukkos. So then why are we assuming that the time frame of Tashlumin for Shavuos is only 7 days like Pesach? Perhaps it should be 8 days like Sukkot. So the Gemara says, no, Shmini Regel Bifnei Atzmo. That's not true, because Shmini Atzeres, as we've already spoken a lot about back in Masechet Sukkah, is an independent holiday. Really has no connection whatsoever to Sukkot. So just because it happens to be the day after Sukkot, it's not considered to be a day in terms of Tashlumin. So the Gemara says, really? Emor Damrina Shmini Regel Bifnei Atzmo Le'inyin Pazar Kashav Aval Le'inyin Tashlumin Divrei HaKol Tashlumin Derishonu. This So the question is, hang on a second, that which we've said back in Masechet Sukkah, that Shmini Atzeres is considered an independent holiday, that's only true in terms of what's called Pazar Kashav. We spoke about this back in Masechet Sukkah. Pazar Kashav stands for Pius, which is the lottery that was cast, and there was a new lottery that was cast on Shmini Atzeres, you know, in other words, in addition to the lotteries that were cast on Sukkot. The Zion stands for Zman, that there's a new Shechiyanu that's required, right? The Reish stands for Regel, in other words, it's considered to be its own holiday. The Kuf is carbon, that it gets its own carbonos that are distinct from Sukkos. The Shin is for Shir, that it has its own Shir that the Levim sing. And the basis for Bracha, right, that has its own Nusach HaBracha, that you say Shmini Chag HaTzeres says that instead of Chag HaSukkos says that. But who says that in terms of Tashlumin, maybe Shmini HaTzeres can act as a Tashlumin for Sukkos? And in fact, the Mishnah seems to bear that out. The Mishnah actually says that if a person didn't bring the carbonos throughout the duration of Sukkos, they can bring it even on the last day, even on Shmini HaTzeres. So the question again is, why are we assuming that Shavuos only has 7 days of Tashlumin like Pesach? Perhaps you should have 8 days of Tashlumin like Sukkot / Shmini Atzeres. To which the Gemara says, no, Tafasta Merubalo Tafasta, Tafasta Mo Tafasta. Famous principle that basically, in other words, we don't want to grab too much. So when you have two options in front of you, either 7 or 8 days of Tashlumin, you're going to always opt with the lesser number because of this principle called Tafasta Merubalo Tafasta, Tafasta Mo Tafasta. Fine. Then the Gemara says, Ela Lamai Hilchasa Kaser Rachmana Lechag HaSukkos. So now the question is, okay, if we've just proven that according to Rav Meir and according to Rabbi Ben Yaakov, that this pasuk of b'chag hamatzos u'b'chag hashavuos u'b'chag hasukkos doesn't really mean anything in the realm of Baal Ta'acher, but the question is, what then does it mean? What is this pasuk teaching us according to those two Tanaim? So the Gemara says, liakushe l'chag hamatzos, it's being used as a comparison to Pesach. Ma'chag hamatzos to'on lina av'chag hasukkos to'on lina. We've spoken about this also, that there's a requirement of lina, that after you bring a karma, you can't just leave Yerushalayim, you have to spend the night there. So the Gemara says, just as there's a requirement of lina, that you have to sleep in Yerushalayim on Motzei Pesach, on Motzei the first day of Pesach, into Chol HaMoed, the same requirement applies for Sukkos. The Hasamana, and how do I know that requirement exists by Pesach? The Chsiv Ufanisa Vaboker V'Halachta Liyohalach. The Pasuk in Parashas Re'eh says that you'll get up in the morning and then you're going to go back to your tents. Then you're going to go back to your house, implying that you have to sleep the night before. That concept carries over to Sukkos, and that's what this Pasuk is teaching me according to Rav Meir and according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, that the concept of Lina applies by Sukkos as well.